Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inch. Glad you could listen today. It has been a bizarre and difficult year in many ways for lots of us. One of the messages we hear in the wake of everything, given a declared recession, is that we should spend money. Yet polls show more of us now want to renew our spiritual lives and to find more time for community and meaning. Is it more patriotic to spend time shopping than to spend time with friends and family? The choice may not be as stark as all that, but speaking as one of the shopping impaired, there are trade-offs along with the benefits of consumer culture, and often it's difficult to know just what they are. As usual, the situation is more complex than that. When we spend money, we make choices about resources and the environment. If we want to be good stewards of the earth and of our own time on it, how do we make good consumer choices? During this hour, Focus 580, our guest is someone who spends a great deal of time talking and writing about consumer action and environmental consequences. Betsy Taylor is executive director of the Center for the New American Dream, a national nonprofit organization working to reduce and shift consumption in households, communities, institutions, and corporations. We'll talk with her during this hour about some of the hidden costs of consumer culture and what we can do about that. As we talk with Betsy Taylor, you are invited into the conversation. You can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's similar to that. Anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Again, anytime during the conversation, your questions are welcome. 333-WILL. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Betsy Taylor, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be with you, Jack.
Good. Let me ask by asking you to talk about some of the research that your organization has found about what people are looking for these days. Are people yearning for more connection, sort of just plain old family time and so forth?
Well, absolutely. At the Center for New American Dream, we conducted a nationwide poll in October and found that this year, as a result of September 11th, 6 out of 10 Americans plan to make the holidays more meaningful than ever, wanting to spend time with family, friends, and to have really something that feels more authentic and deep for them this year. Only 8%, for example, say they want to use this holiday season to prop up the national economy. Also found that there are some people who would like to help. They're aware that the economy has been shaky. But they, even if they want to help with some sort of patriotic spending, they don't feel they can afford to. They're worried about going into financial crisis. And at the center, we've been saying, look, if we're already feeling a lot of fear across the country, no need to add to that fear by taking on too much debt, taking on too much credit card debt in particular, and waking up after the holidays feeling fearful about how are you going to pay the bills.
Now, maybe it's just the way that the media tends to simplify messages, but it does seem odd that we do get this message that we should go out to be patriotic, good Americans, we should go out and spend money, that's something that this country needs us to do right now.
Right. Well, we do have a bit of a paradox. On the one hand, I think especially this year, especially after September 11th, which was a huge gut check for the whole country, when we saw planes going into buildings, when we were worried or still are feeling worried about anthrax in our mail, the first thing you think of is not running to the mall. What you think of and what we saw across the country was tremendous reconnection among people, people helping each other out, people really reconnecting with their families and friends. That was the immediate instinct. And yet we're being told to go shop. It feels weird. It's so different than what we were told to do during World War II, for example, which was to sacrifice.
Right.
The paradox, of course, is that to some extent our global economy has become dependent on American consumer spending, and it's not sustainable. The American consumers cannot do what's being asked of them. Last year, for example, Jack, we had 1.4 million households declare bankruptcy. Our rate of savings is at 1%. We are carrying way too much debt. College students are getting into trouble with debt. And, of course, it's more than financially unsustainable. It's environmentally unsustainable. If everybody on the planet consumed like the average American, we would need, according to several scientists, four more planets just to provide the resources. So our system isn't structured in a way that's sustainable, and we get these messages, and as consumers and as Americans who want to do the right thing, it can be complex.
Well, you know, we're sitting here on December 24th, Christmas Eve, and it sounds strange to be talking about, the idea that we should consume less, or maybe it doesn't sound that strange, but, you know, it does seem that we have this almost compulsion that the way we express ourselves at this time of year is by buying things and, you know, giving people gifts and consuming a great deal of materials.
Well, that's become the definition of the holidays, that we get through the television, through Madison Avenue. We're bombarded with these messages that say, hey, you know, express your love, express your sense of connection through things, through stuff. But there are many Americans who are opting out of that or are not opting all the way out because, you can buy things that are about meaning, but they are choosing to do more than that, to make the holidays more than about stuff. For example, this year, many, many people are choosing to give to charity. At our organization, we have a website, newdream.org, and there are many, many options there for connecting up with Afghan relief efforts, with local homeless shelters, to give to charities in the name of a loved one, as an example. Other people are saying, you know, there's just more to this holiday than giving things. There is about being together. And so they're focusing not necessarily on the gift giving, but on doing things like taking a walk in a park or having the family get together and share poetry or sing. So there's a lot of people who are saying, how can I make this holiday something really special so that my kids are given magic memories and that I wake up after the whole thing's over feeling renewed, refreshed, rested, and reconnected with the people I care about.
Among the things on your website, I really like a lot of the campaigns you've got. One of them is entitled More Fun, Less Stuff. and as a parent of two young kids, I mean, I know the amount of stuff coming into my household is just endless, and it just seems to grow and grow. And, you know, when we were kids, we had a certain amount of toys, but it just seems that, we can't keep the stuff out of our house because
Everybody
wants to bring it.
I know. I have two kids, too.
Yeah.
It's a deluge, and kids in particular are being marketed to in very intensive ways, not only through the television, but, of course, through the Internet, through all sorts of advertising, and we've documented this. Again, there are many ways to try to approach this holiday, not in an anti-consumerist mode necessarily. Again, we're not anti-consuming, but it's a question of balance. It's a question of how do you help your kids relate to this holiday in a way that is about more than stuff. For some people, of course, that's about really reaffirming their faith. For some, it's simply about creating traditions that are fun. For example, in my family, we try to instill fun. We also try to instill meaning. So we have this annual tradition where we put on a play. We typically take a play that is very well known by everybody, Cinderella or Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but we assign the roles in bizarre ways. So my father, who's 75, played Snow White. And this has become our thing. We've now done it 4 years in a row. It just happens to be something we get a kick out of. And on the meaning side, we have a gathering in our community where all the children on my block gather and make gift boxes for children in a local shelter. There's countless ways that we can stop, reflect on what's important, and create traditions that go beyond hitting the mall.
I think, you know, this discussion of kids is really key because they are so vulnerable to those messages that say, you want this, you need this, everybody has this.
Right.
And, you know, my kids, we restrict access to the television to some extent, but we're not complete, you know, prohibitionists.
Right.
And they see commercial television and the comments from my kids are so typical when they see something, it could be anything, any commercial, every commercial. I want that.
Right. It's a Pavlovian response.
Right.
Well, I would say, again, if your listeners are interested, and of course this is a very hectic day and a hectic time of year, but all year round, kids are bombarded with these messages. It's particularly intense now. And at the Center for New American Dream, we have a free publication called Parenting and Tips for Parenting in a Commercial Culture. We also have a free publication called Simplify the Holidays, which you can find both of these on our website at newdream.org. And in the tips for parenting, one of the things we emphasize that you might try with your own children is, you're exactly right, don't deny them access, because we, you know, for better or worse, we live in a commercial world. But it's really important for children to be taught how to analyze advertising, just as one thing we can all do. We should do it as adults as well, to talk with them, to sit down and watch some of these ads with them, and not to underestimate a 4 or 5-year-old's ability to understand what's being sold, how are they using music or color to sell it, and, you know, do I really want it? And if you do this for a while with children, you can actually at least mildly inoculate them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, sure, it's going to always be there, but by getting them these tools of analyzing advertising, and again, this is one thing we can do that's positive, in my opinion, we can give them a sense of power. We can, their first response to those ads won't be, I want it.
Right.
The first response will be, okay, so what are they trying to sell me and how? And it might be something worth buying, but in many cases, it's junk. And they'll say, you know, it's not going to really make me fit in with my friends if I get that kind of potato chip.
So you have to focus on the values that they can relate to in terms of relationships and feelings and so forth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I think we are in such a consumerist society, and we are not encouraged to think about the hidden costs of this sort of work and spend definition of the American dream. But many Americans are beginning to question the more is better definition of the dream, both for their kids and for themselves. And again, at the center, we provide people with lots of tools for looking at this. What do I really want? Do I want to work all those extra hours and take on all that extra debt to get the more and bigger things? Maybe in a few cases, yeah. But in many cases, the answer to that may be no. And maybe more importantly, perhaps I'm talking a bit too much here, Jackson.
That's all right. No. We like guests who talk a lot. It's all right.
I know. I think the other thing that so many of us don't look at because we're not encouraged to, and it's not about meaning to hurt anything, but with our consumption in this country, we are damaging the environment that we all depend on. The scale of American consumption just isn't sustainable. We consume 40% of the world's gasoline, and we're under 5% of the world's population. We consume more paper, more aluminum, more energy, more water per capita than any other group on the planet. And the problem is, we're the model. Everybody wants to be like us. So over the next 50 years together, Americans are going to have to figure out how to consume differently, and we're going to have to demand that industry produce things differently so that we can still have the resources we need and not produce so much garbage and waste.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a bit about that because this is a big area, the production of stuff in the environment, resources and waste. All the packages that I know are going to be brought into my household over the holidays,
right?
A lot of them are, you know, wrapped in this hard plastic, and there's all this cardboard and packaging, and then, of course, you know, that's wrapped with paper and ribbons, which are beautiful, and we all enjoy, you know, presenting someone with that. It just seems that, I mean, just in terms of packaging alone, let alone what the stuff is made of, a lot of plastic toys, I mean, we're talking about consumption of petroleum products and chemicals and a lot of things that are problematic once you get them in. You know, how do you deal with just, you know, the waste of it?
It's huge. And I think a lot of people hear this and they say, oh, gosh, it's too big. I can't do anything about it. Somebody else is going to solve that problem. The reality is that there is an emerging movement of very conscious consumers. We call them green consumers, wise consumers, sustainable consumers, people who are thinking about these questions. A lot of them are listeners of NPR stations. And these people are beginning to actually shift our economy. You're right. The Christmas week, the holiday week, is a microcosm that's that's representing the rest of the year. It's the week when we generate more garbage, more trash than any other week of the year, for example. But it's a problem all year round. Packaging, junk mail coming into our house, excessive stuff, and stuff that's made out of toxic material. So what do we possibly do about that? And what's happening is that consumers are beginning to ask corporations to change, to say, you know, we are going to consume. We have to buy food. We have to buy paper. There are things we have to buy. We want to buy things that are healthy, healthy for us and healthy for the environment. And where we've seen a huge change, of course, is in the food sector. There's been a 20% annual growth rate, for example, in the delivery of organic and locally produced food. We're seeing it in mainstream grocery stores. It's very exciting because it's good for the economy and it's good for the environment. But we're beginning to see it in other sectors too. And educated consumers are the key to this change. When we say as consumers, I am going to spend my money, but I'm looking to spend it someplace where I'm not going to feel bad about its impact on the environment. For example, at the center, we have a program called Step by Step, because we see this is a step-by-step process, mm-hmm. It's a long time, where we help consumers identify changes they want to see in corporate America or in the delivery of goods. Most recently, we had 2,000 letters that we sent to Staples. And Staples is the biggest deliverer of office paper in this country to the home for things like our computers, home computers. And Staples has recently agreed, not only from our pressure and requests, but from those of others, to say, okay, we are going to start delivering paper products that are a much higher content of recycled, not using chlorine bleach, and also not using trees that come out of old-growth forests. That's huge. That is huge. And that's a win for Staples, because Staples is going to be helping protect the environment, and they're going to be positioning themselves to attract people like you and me, people who say, you know, I want to look for products that are good for the environment. And this is happening all over the place, but, of course, it's hard for the consumer to see because we're at the beginning of something that's going to take a few decades.
Interesting. We have a couple calls to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. Let me just mention for those of you who may have joined us in the last few minutes, we're talking this morning with Betsy Taylor. She's Executive Director of the Center for a New American Dream. And essentially we're talking about what we can do to make good choices as consumers in terms of the environmental impact of our choices and also the impact on our lives and time. And we'll talk with her during this hour and welcome your questions. We have a couple lines open still. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener on line number 4 here. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Yes, I have 3 issues that I am vehement about. One, I get thrown on my private property 2 newspapers that I never asked. One I can't read, it's a foreign language, and the other one I never asked for. And they're thrown on my lawn on my private property. 2, I've written to everybody not to write to me. I died yesterday. Don't send me any more trash mail. And they really don't listen, and they don't want to. And the third thing I feel vehement about, you can't get anything repaired. They just give you a new product. I just went through 3 telephones. Could I mention the company? It's a great company, but I'm very annoyed that if one of their phones they sell you doesn't work, they just give you a new one.
No, they're pretty much all like that now, I think.
It's terrible. It's the trashing of America.
Yeah.
Well, you could be our poster child. I strongly agree with everything you're feeling strongly about, and I would say that on the newspapers, I had the same thing happening. I think this is a typical American problem. I did call the producers of my papers, and they did stop delivering. I don't know if you can try that.
How can I do the Spanish one, you know?
That's a little more challenging. You may have to find a Spanish-speaking neighbor. On the junk mail,
I've written to everybody.
Yeah, well, this is a big issue, though. I mean, is there some way that we can effectively tell people don't send us junk mail?
No, you can't. I've been doing it for 10 years.
Oh, let me ask our guest if she can.
We actually had an anti-junk mail campaign that we launched a year and a half ago. And if you contact us, if you're on the internet, you can go to www.newdream.org. And we actually have a ready-made letter already typed up there. You just click on it and put in your name and address, and we will then send it to, there's two vendors that block, and I should say, it's really not 100% block. It's about an 80% block on junk mail. It seems like somehow there's always a few companies that get around it. But we can block 80% of the junk mail coming into your home if you go to our website. If you're not on the website, you can write to us or call us, and we will stop about 80% of that junk mail that comes into your home. It's very frustrating, and of course, it's not just frustrating to know that there's all this trash that just keeps being generated. What is that trash? It's trees. It's trees that are being cut down to make that paper. So it's very disturbing.
Could I tell you one other thing? My daughter works in Naperville, and I told her about this problem of getting trash on my front lawn. She said they've been fighting it in the council and can't do anything about it either. So this isn't only this community, it's other communities. And
oh, sure.
You can't do anything about it. It's your private property. I get so upset about it. That's the only reason I would do more about it, but I take care of my mother. In fact, I should be finishing her breakfast, but I heard what you were talking about, so I left her for a while. Because I feel so much about this trashing of America. It's just terrible.
Well, right. Thank you for your passion.
Thanks for the call. Well, let me just, Betsy Taylor, let me just ask you to address this idea that I think a lot of us have, that the caller expressed, that we can't do anything about it, you know?
Yeah, and I think this is, again, we at the Center for an American Dream, we conducted surveys and focus groups and polling. We've done several of these to try to understand how people do feel about these issues. And we found overwhelmingly that people do want to help. They want to do something, but it can't be 50 things. It's got to be a few things.
Mm-hmm.
They also want to know that what they're doing will make a difference, and they want to know that other people are doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
So we, again, at the Center for an American Dream, we've created a program just in the last few months which gives people 9 specific things that they can do. We picked these 9 steps. These are environmental consumer steps that are easy, and they have a measurable impact. When you take a step, you immediately can see how many trees you're saving. For example, one of the steps is blocking junk mail. Another step is skipping one car trip a week. By skipping one car trip, and we're saying on average a 20-mile trip, you can keep about 20 pounds of carbon dioxide from being emitted into the atmosphere and help stop global warming. So at any rate, if you go to our website, again, excuse me if I seem to be plugging the site, but it's loaded with free things at newdream.org. The program Turn the Tide will give you 9 consumer actions where you can immediately see a difference. How much carbon dioxide are you taking out of the atmosphere by changing a light bulb, skipping a car trip? How much water can you save? How many trees can you save? By simple actions. They're not hard things to do. They're fairly simple. And we also show you the impact of all the other people doing them. And at the center, we're a small nonprofit, and we are giving this program to the big environmental groups as well. So several of the big ones, including Greenpeace and Natural Resources Defense Council and others, are looking at this. And we just say, anybody who'd like to use this, let's pitch in together, make a difference.
We may talk about some more of those points as we continue during this hour, but we have several callers waiting, and we'll defer to them. We'll go next to a listener on line number 1. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thank you. Boy, it's really great to hear you, and I can't wait to go to your website. I wanted to say, I called in about one issue, but I wanted to say, too, the last caller bringing up that point about not being able to repair things, that is so frustrating. You know, you have a whole stereo or whatever, you know, it takes up like, you know, a square foot of space or a television or something, and it probably needs one small thing fixed on it, but you can't get it fixed. You have to, like, well, either put it in your basement like we do and have a mountain of things in your basement that you dream someday will be able to be fixed, or else you have to put it in the trash, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah. Would you like me to respond to that briefly?
Yes, but I should probably go ahead and say my other thing, and then
okay.
Yes, and maybe you could respond to that too. Another frustrating hidden cost that we don't hear about very much is the forced labor and sweatshop labor in other countries. That's what actually makes it possible for us to buy all of these things at the low prices. And if people in other countries were earning decent wages for the things that they make for us, we would have to consume a lot less. And we can do, you know, there's two sides to that as far as, our actions go. One is that, you know, we can try to buy things that don't come from sweatshop labor, and there are websites, and maybe even on your website it talks about that. But another very important factor there is that our government through the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank makes it, what make it possible to force governments in other countries to make laws that allow their workers to be exploited and their environment to be exploited. So I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Those are fantastic points and questions. And, of course, there's actually a connection between our inability to be able to repair things and the fact that so many corporations are making things with underpaid, low-paid labor in other countries. Things are made very cheaply, and it's actually, from the corporation's perspective, easier to just try to sell you another one based on that very underpaid labor rather than to set up repair services, customer services. Again, yes, I agree very strongly that part of the hidden cost of our consumer culture is not only the environmental cost of the tremendous use of resources, using up resources that our kids are going to need, creating a generation of waste, but also, of course, the fact that there are people making these products in conditions that are not humane, that are not fair. And it is that kind of system, I think, that engenders violence, that engenders bad feelings, that engenders hostility towards the United States or towards the corporations that are identified with the United States. Again, the good news is that there are lots of people saying, look, we're not going to wait for a federal policy change. Congress is very difficult to change. We're going to try to change things through the marketplace. And there's been phenomenal organizing, using sort of a carrot and stick. On the one hand, thanking corporations when they do the right thing. On the other hand, pressuring them to say, you must change. If you want our consumer power, if you want our consumer dollars, you must change. You must treat workers properly. You must protect the environment. And if you do that, we will buy from you. And that kind of organizing is something we are very focused on at the Center for an American Dream. And we are seeing changes in major corporations that are beginning to hear these voices of consumers. Again, I would invite people and urge you, we need you, we can't do this without you, to consider, and Jack, forgive me if this is too much of a plug, but we do have a program.
All right.
Step by Step, which is a program at our website, newdream.org, where if this is the kind of thing you're interested in, we encourage you to sign up and help us speak to corporations. And I should say again, some of the times we just say thank you because there's some good guys out there. But sometimes we say, you can't do that. You can't hire children to make soccer balls, or you can't produce things in a way that are contaminating our drinking water supply, that sort of thing.
Thank you very much. I'll listen to the rest of the program.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call. We're a little past our midpoint this morning. Our guest during this hour, Focus 580, is Betsy Taylor. She is Executive Director of the Center for the New American Dream, Center for a New American Dream. And the website, again, is newdream.org, and you can look at some of the things that we're talking about there in more detail. We have a couple callers we'll get to right away. Let me just mention a bit more about our guest. Betsy Taylor has served as head of several grant-making foundations, including the Merck Family Fund and the Ottinger Foundation, and on the Population and Consumption Task Force of the President's Council for Sustainable Development. She has testified before Congress and addressed national conventions of industry, government, and environmental groups, and has been published in the Washington Post, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and the Boston Globe. And we're talking this morning about how to make good consumer choices at this time of the year, a lot of issues that we're dealing with. We have several callers waiting, and it looks like actually our lines are all full. And I'll mention the numbers one more time if you'd like to join us in a few minutes. We should have, we'll try to get as many calls as we can. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, listener on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Is that me?
That's you.
I have two things. I just tuned in late, and I heard you say bleach, and I just wondered what you were talking about, bleach.
Okay, there's a lot of scientific evidence, not with the kind of necessarily the bleach in your home, but when they make paper and when we make actually several other products, most notably plastic products, there are chlorine products used, and this use of chlorine in making of plastics and the making of paper has tremendous problems for the environment and growing evidence problems for human health. And so when I talked about chlorine, which I don't think I said bleach, but chlorine, it's chlorine compounds that are used in the making of paper and the making of plastics that have a tremendous impact on our drinking water, and there's some indication on our hormonal the hormones in our body. Being attributed as one of the causes of growing infertility. Now, again, there's a scientific debate there, but there's enough evidence that that there's a move by the environmental community and consumer groups to try to eliminate the use of these chlorine-related compounds.
Okay, but you're not talking about chlorine bleach that we use in our laundry?
No, yeah. No.
Okay. Well, and then the other thing is, you know, this past year we all got these privacy notices that... There was a law passed that people couldn't hand out your name to organizations for them to send you.
Right.
Well, I tell you, I've gotten more mail from more different sources since that privacy notice thing, and I did everything I was supposed to do to stop it, for them sending them to me.
Right.
And I've gotten more new pieces of mail than ever before.
Yeah, this is a huge problem. Again, I would encourage people to join our anti-junk mail campaign by going to our website. It's very easy. Once you sign up, for one thing, I will tell you at the Center for New American Dream, we never, ever share your name with anybody, and our role is actually to contact the corporate vendors and get you off their lists. The other thing I would say is whenever you speak to any company, no matter who they are, if they ask for your name and contact information, it's important for you to voluntarily say, and please do not sell my name or give my name or make it available to anybody, because many of them, unless you take the initiative to say that, they will, in fact, market your name.
Yeah. Well, and it's part of the problem is also that there are more of these marketing organizations that are more aggressively targeting people. So even if you ask off the list, there are people compiling lists all the time.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody has a 100% foolproof wall. I would not say that we do at the Center for an American Dream, but I do know that our programs, we work with several vendors whose whole function is to block junk mail. As I said earlier in the show, we can block about 80% of it, and that's a huge help. It also helps save the trees that are being lost to make this stuff.
Yeah. Well, our lines are full. Let's go on and talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
I was wondering about all this excess packaging. Now, it seems to me that if there was some way to tie in the getting rid of the excess packaging or getting rid of old TVs or anything that has to go into the waste stream, if there was some mechanism when you bought the product that it would... Mm-hmm. be part of the cost, and then it's a little easier to then shop for, or easier for the consumer to be able to control this. Because a lot of things, you just can't buy it without getting a bunch of excess plastic and other things attached.
Right. Yeah, that's such a great point, and I would say that in Europe, they're ahead of us on this point. They, in Germany in particular, they passed a law which requires the manufacturers of major appliances, refrigerators, microwaves, TVs. These manufacturers are actually responsible for the ultimate disposal of those products, which means when the product breaks or at the end of its life, it gets returned, and the manufacturer pays for this, it gets returned to the manufacturer. What that's done is completely begin to change the design of those things. They're being designed for durability, to be reused, to be recycled. And in this country, that debate is emerging. Now, there are efforts underway by many environmental groups, including my own, to push particularly for a clean computer, a computer that at the end of its life, rather than having to go into a landfill, can be refurbished, reused, and some companies are doing this, so that it's that many of the parts can be utilized again. And this is going to take consumer pressure. It's going to take consumers saying, we can't stand all this junk going into landfills. It's full of toxic chemicals. Please give us a good appliance or computer, an appliance that can be repaired, that's durable, that's non-toxic, and where you guys take responsibility for it at the end of the life. I think this is coming, but it's going to take a lot of consumer pressure because many corporations would prefer to just continue as they're doing now. Again, please join our program step by step. The whole point of it is to ask consumers to make these changes.
Is there any role for government as far as, now, like there's the bottle bill, which tends to get, in those states which passed it, gets bottles returned. Tires, you have to pay a certain amount to, when you get new tires for the old ones to be reused. But those are government programs. Can the government...
Well, you're right, and in a democracy, in a good functioning government, our government would be passing more laws that would make it easy for everybody to do the right thing. Unfortunately, excuse me, without campaign finance reform, in my personal opinion, it's very difficult to get these kind of bills passed. The bottle bill, for example, is being attacked by the corporations that are in the bottling industry. Most corporations find it cheaper not to do the recycling, not to do the durable, non-toxic production. And so there of course, are many interests that lobby Congress. I do agree with you. In the long run, we will have to get some policies that make it easy for everybody to do the right thing, corporations and consumers. My personal feeling, in the short run, the best way to get there is to organize consumers to directly speak to corporations and to use our market power to get them to do these things. I would say we're working, sorry about that, a little catch in my throat. The White House Task Force on Recycling is doing a good job at working on some of these policies and trying to look at particularly electronics and the need to build in the cost of recycling and reuse. So there are people in Washington trying to get at this. But I think in the short term, we need consumers speaking up.
Well, our lines are full, and I want to get on and include as many people.
Sorry.
That's all right. But I wanted to follow up. You put your finger on something I think is really key to this whole discussion. And you know, you mentioned campaign finance reform. I think a lot of us feel like our voices aren't going to be heard. You know, sure, we cannot buy something. Maybe that's, you know, in the market economy, that's one of the ways that we communicate to producers is by not buying what they produce. But are there some other ways that people can communicate that message?
Yes, you can certainly speak to your elected officials, and we should be speaking to our elected officials in our homes, in Illinois. Talk to your members of Congress and say that you support it's called extended producer responsibility, where the producer takes responsibility for disposal. I would encourage people to do that, encourage them to support the bottle bills. Again, at the Center for New American Dream, we do help people take policy action. But I think under our current system of government, so many of us feel paralyzed by the inability to get Congress to do anything that's really positive for the environment. Sometimes it happens, but usually all of our work there is defense. How do we keep Congress through corporate influence from doing terrible things? So I strongly encourage us to speak to our elected officials, but also to act as consumers in the marketplace.
Okay. Let's go on and talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Yes.
A good part of this problem may be the main aim of, maybe the main source of this problem is that it's a political problem more than anything else, and consumerism is all part of the political picture. You have a guy in the White House who is a master political manipulator, and he says, you want to cut short this present economic situation, you have to go out and buy. And he's operating from two points of view. In the first place, he's a guy who was raised with an infinite amount of money for all this, never had to worry about funding. If he wanted something, his parents would pay for it, and he could pay for it, and that was it. And this is not the case with a vast majority of the people in the in this country. The other is that his message, bye, 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 is not too different from Roosevelt's when Roosevelt first came into office, although they were operating with different goals in mind. Roosevelt said, all you have to fear is fear itself, and don't hoard your money, and if necessary, go out and buy. Well, people didn't have the money, but this guy says, go out and buy, buy, buy. But Roosevelt also, in order to try to bring the country back on its feet, he had governmental programs, the WPA and the CCC and unemployment compensation, Social Security, and so on. This meant taxing the people who had the money in order to improve the welfare of the rest of the country. This president says, we're going to give all the money in the Treasury to the wealthiest people, and therefore he rapes the Treasury of several hundred billion dollars. And this goes to the 5 or 10% of the wealthiest people and corporations in the country, and the rest of the country gets socked for it. And
I think we take your point. Let's see if our guest has response. And we're running short of time, so I'm sorry to cut you short, but I want to try and include more people, too. Thanks for your call.
I think you have many good points, and I think that certainly since 1980, we've seen a tremendous attack on the role of government in trying to provide people with a safety net. So, yes, I agree with the caller that when we're told to buy, 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 we get into financial trouble, especially working people, low-income people. They go into debt. There's not much of a safety net there, you know, no health insurance for many. So I agree. We've had a shift in priorities in this country that's very disturbing. We've had a gap between rich and poor that's very disturbing. And we need people of goodwill, progressive people, to join together to say, you know, we can move this in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, you know, reflecting on the thoughts of the caller, it seems that in previous decades, in response to a national crisis, there was a sense that we need to pull together, that we need to help each other out, that there was an obligation to the national community that each of us, you know, were willing to sacrifice for. And I don't know, but maybe you have some insight in the research your organization does. Is there a sense that maybe we're moving back in that direction?
Well, I think many of us were lifted up by finally, rather than having multi-million dollar celebrities in Hollywood be on the front pages of all of our papers all the time, what we've had in the last few months is firefighters. We've had public servants. We've had, airline attendants, people who have shown real courage, real sacrifice. And these are the people who suddenly are our heroes. For me, this is a wonderful thing, and I think for many Americans, to see working people, often underpaid public servants, out there getting the credit that they've deserved for a long time, because when the crisis hit, they came through. They're still coming through. So I think there has been a shift. Again, at the Center for New American Dream, we did a national poll that showed, at least during this holiday season, especially as a result of September 11th, what people want is not to go shopping. What people want is to reconnect with family, with friends, and with a sense that there's more meaningful things in life than just going to the mall.
We have several callers and about 5 minutes left. Let's see how many we can squeeze in the time remaining. We'll go next to a listener on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Thank you. Yeah, one of the things that people can do that, well, I think it's easiest. Maybe some people will find it difficult, but can have a tremendous impact on the environment is just being a vegetarian. And if they don't think that they can, you know, swing being a vegetarian, at least significantly reduce the amount of meat they eat, because it requires a lot of petroleum for anhydrous ammonia and petroleum-based fuels, and a lot of petroleum just to get the thing to market, and tremendous amounts of water to, water for the animals and production. causes them to use a lot of antibiotics, which are very bad, and just on and on and on, and causes a lot of trees to be cut down in places like Latin America. I could go on and on and on, but people don't realize the tremendous environmental impact that our meat consumption causes.
Yeah, very good point. And I just very quickly say that, again, at the Center for New American Dream, we have a program on our website called newdream.org called Turn the Tide. And one of the steps of these 9 easy things you can do to make a difference, one of those steps is to skip 1 beef meal a week. We're not saying you have to go all the way vegetarian. Some people have chosen that, and that's terrific for them. But if that's not where you're at, if you skip 1 beef meal a week, we quantify the impact in terms of the water it takes to grow the grain to feed the cow, the trees cut to open up the meadows for the cows. And it is tremendous, a tremendous impact. And again, with most of these programs, we encourage balance. So if you are a meat eater, that's okay. But we need to reduce the amount of meat we eat, increase vegetables, locally grown organic produce. And it's good for the economy, and it's good for our human health, and it's certainly good for the environment.
Yeah, I was shocked when I read a statistical analysis that showed that someone who has a heavy meat diet actually causes the use of more petroleum than a vegetarian driving the same distance. That, you know, if they are walking, the meat eater walking, mm-hmm. and the vegetarian driving.
I'm not as familiar with the petroleum impact, but there's a huge impact in terms of grain, water. There is energy consumed, and we quantify it on the website. So I agree with you strongly. It's good for the environment when we eat locally grown organic vegetables and fruit.
Hope it gets to the caller's point. We have several callers waiting, and we actually have a little bit more time than I was thinking a minute ago. There's no market report this morning, so we have another 7 minutes or so remaining. We'll go next to a listener on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I missed a few minutes of the program, and so I apologize if I'm repeating something somebody else said. I've got a couple of comments. Regarding junk mail, in addition to the Farmingdale, New York place, wherever it is, I had limited success with them. But any business or political campaign, et cetera, that has its own postage paid envelope, if you stuff that with their junk mail and any other junk mail you have left and make it as full as possible and write, please take my name off your mailing list and send it back to him, it's somewhat successful.
Yeah, this is real consumer action. We work with 2 or 3 different companies that are trying to block the mail, but you're right. Sometimes they're not effective, and this direct consumer action where you're forcing the company to pay for the return junk mail you send and their enclosed BRE, the business reply envelope, is a great strategy.
And the other thing, in regards to the woman who called, I share her concern with wanting to raise the living wage for everybody in the world, and sweatshops are awful. But those people are getting some money that they might not be getting otherwise. And that's not to justify my spending habits or anybody else's, but sometimes something is better than nothing. And happy holidays, and thanks so much for the program.
Thanks for the call. I think the listener raises a very interesting point. And in fact, some of the activist organizations who are sort of on the lookout for sweatshop abuses say, you know, the answer is not simply to stop buying products from, you know, Taiwan or Singapore or Philippines or wherever, but maybe to influence the corporations to pay the people better.
Right. I think that the companies, of course, say that they're paying at a much higher level than these workers would have received otherwise. The counter, of course, coming from U.S. workers is that they're being paid at such a low level that it's taking all the jobs away from the United States and that the conditions are still not proper or fair. So I think we're in a time of transition, and those people who are organizing to say to the Gap, you know, to say to McDonald's, to say to Coke, hey, you know, we're not going to buy your products if you don't change your conditions. We've seen changes from those 3 companies, for example, and more is needed.
Let's talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
My comment is this. I'm a small candle maker, small business. I make candles. And I find that a lot of times retailers who are driven by the demands of the consumers, of customers, want to have lots of packaging, and they'll take a product like two little votive candles, the two little tiny ones, put them in a box inside of a ribbon, inside of a couple of tags, and they can triple the price on it because they've got the packaging. And a lot of times consumers are looking for all the frou-frou and the ribbons in the packaging and not looking for the product. And this is a real problem from the point of view of somebody who's trying to produce something that is not high in consumption, high in packaging, and that's something that's simple and usable. Consumers often don't want it.
Yeah, you're raising a great point. And again, I think from where I sit, I don't think everybody's going to become an environmentally conscious consumer or a consumer that's trying to change the way people are paid in Vietnam when they make something, or a consumer that's helping local business people like yourself make it. But what I am seeing is a segment, a 5 to 10 to 15% of the American public that is beginning to shop this way. All it takes is 15%, maybe 20, according to the data that we've looked at. If we can get 15% of the American consumers buying in a way that says, going, they go up, they're aggressive, and they say to the companies, we're not going to buy this because it's overpackaged. Mm-hmm. If we can get enough people saying that, it doesn't have to be everybody, it doesn't have to be a majority, but a small, organized group saying this, it begins to change the way corporate America operates. I agree. You know, there's a huge industry that's focused only on packaging, selling through the packaging.
Oh, I know. One of the things that I've taken to doing is I've bought a paper shredder, and I collect paper from school teachers, actually, old papers and exams and stuff. I shred them up and use it as packaging material instead of using all that plastic popcorn.
Oh, I love you. We need more people like you out there.
But, you know, a lot of times people aren't very receptive. Sometimes stores will say to me, well, don't ship in that stuff because it's a little bit heavier than the popcorn. And there's just something really necessary about educating consumers about the fact that they're paying, for me, the production, the wholesale cost of two little votive candles is 75 cents each. Mm-hmm. I've seen them sold in stores in tons of packaging for $12 for two of them.
Right.
And they sell like crazy, and people just don't think about the fact that what they're paying for is the name on the package and the packaging, and 90% of the time those things are coming from China, and who knows if they're being made by slave labor.
Right.
And they'll, on the bottom you can see a little button that says made in China. It's all plastic packaged with ribbons and bows and some designer's name that I won't repeat. And the product isn't good.
Yeah.
But that's what they're paying for. They're paying to give a gift that says some designer's name so somebody else knows that they paid a lot of money for it.
Yeah. Well, you're right. We need consumers who are willing sometimes to pay, you know, to go out of their way to look for the right kind of product. And if we have enough people doing that, I think we can shift the way things are made. That's what we're betting on to Center for a New American Dream. Thank you for what you're doing. You sound like such a thoughtful business person.
We have a little less than 2 minutes left. I'm going to squeeze in one last caller on line number four. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the call. For those who I share the view of being kind of frustrated, especially with the impact of an individual consumer in their national legislative level, I just want to suggest that people consider Consumers Union and their best-known publication, Consumer Reports. They also have publications that try to teach people beginning at earlier school ages to be conscientious consumers, and they do lobby in Washington for the consumer's best interests. And also, with respect to campaign finance reform, another kind of consumer lobbyist that listeners might consider if they haven't already is Common Cause. And I'll just leave it at that, and thank you very much for your attitude and your effort.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, Betsy Taylor, I would just, you know, we have about a minute left. The only thing I can really reflect on is it seems, as evidenced by all the calls during this hour, that there is a great deal, perhaps growing interest in this area.
I'm ready to move to Illinois. Your callers have been great. I would just say I think a lot of times it's easy to feel discouraged, not to feel real hope about the possibility of change. What we're seeing at the Center for an American Dream is literally, we've had 25 million hits on our website this year. We're having a growing wave of interest, and it's not just us. There are other groups like the one the caller just mentioned. I ask your listeners to do something, just one thing. You know, they can contact us at newdream.org. They can support Consumers Union. But do something to help begin building a truly safer, environmentally safe, people-friendly future. We're not going to make a utopian future, but if enough of us get together, I think as consumers and as citizens in this country, we can begin to shift this huge ship in a much more positive direction. We need you at the Center for an American Dream, as other nonprofits need you. So thank you. Thanks to the listeners, because I've been so impressed with the people who've called in.
Well, thanks so much for your time. We're going to have to end there. Our guest, Betsy Taylor, Executive Director of the Center for a New American Dream. We'll take a break. When we return, we'll talk with Tom Schenck about work and career issues. First News. Stay with us.